Suddenly, the word corruption is in the news, and it's about time. How much corruption can we handle? We'll talk about it in podcast 868, the Bob Davis Podcasts. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts and sharing my posts on social media. That really helps the podcast. Yeah, I love likes, Twitter, Facebook, whatever, but what I really want are the retweets and shares. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast right off the page of the BobDavisPodcast.com, Stitcher.com, especially iTunes, which is the granddaddy of podcasting. Tune In, which works with Alexa, Google Play Music, which also works with the Google device. And if you have an Android phone, smartphone type device, I would suggest Spotify, because that seems to be the most seamless way to listen to the Bob Davis Podcast. Also, Spotify, just has recently started the podcast service, and they're doing really good. And again, also Blog Talk Radio. So appreciate all that stuff. And thanks for your donations for Mobile Podcast Command at thebobdavispodcast.com. Speaking of Mobile Podcast Command, if you listen to podcast 867, you heard me interview the owner of Fitness Together. So let's talk about Fitness Together for a second. Let's talk about fitness. Because as you know, if you are in the fitness world, if you go to the gym or do yoga or any of that stuff, there's lots of big box gyms around, places to work out, or whatever. Now, I could tell you about Fitness Together in Edina and Maple Grove, Minnesota, but it is better if some of the people working with personal trainers at Fitness Together tell you about it, and we're going to do that right now.
Well, I met with John and I toured the facility, and it was awesome. He went through the whole process of what they do. It's personalized for me, and I just felt very comfortable in the environment, at least even before I started.
Fitness Together, private personalized training and nutrition. And the nutrition stuff actually is what I'm most interested in. They have this DNA testing that allows them to determine which diet works best for you, which is pretty cool. But the whole thing is about private training rooms, no waiting or distractions, privacy and time efficiency of your workout. Everybody is unique. Everybody is at a different level. They recognize this. Doesn't matter if you're just starting out. Doesn't matter if you've been injured or need to start working out to optimize your health. Fitness Together is for you. Fitness Together in Maple Grove at 763-494-0061, in Edina at 952-927-0300, Fitness Together at fitnesstogether.com, or click on the banner at the top of the page, thebobdavispodcast.com. Fitness Together, private personalized training and nutrition. Well, it's coffee time, and so I'm down here in the studio. Good to be back in the studio after a bunch of traveling around in Mobile Podcast Command. So I'm going to talk about something I've been thinking about for a long time. And if you're like me, you probably grew up with the same born on the 4th of July U.S. history I did. The Grand Republic, checks and balances, the glory of justice for all, fighting for freedom, saying the Pledge of Allegiance. And of course, some of that is true. Now, today's students are taught the same Pollyanna kind of history. It's just a different focus. They focus more on civil rights and the environment. They're taught that government can save us. And maybe some of that is right as well. But there is a more controversial history of the United States, the story of a weaker and perhaps more naive government growing stronger by the generation, the influence of money and power. And I think our governments are much more corrupt than we imagine that they are. And I know what you're thinking. It's those damn Republicans or it's those damn Democrats. But corruption is not necessarily Democrat or Republican in the United States. It just is, and it appears in both mainline political parties. It has appeared in both mainline political parties going back generations. So not just in the current time frame, not just Democrats and Republicans, but Whigs and Republican Democrats and Democrat Republicans and so on. We're going to define corruption. And then I want to ask, how much corruption is dangerous? How much can we handle? And that's what we're going to do in this podcast. First of all, what is corruption? And just as an aside, one of the things I've learned is that different worldviews produce different views of what corruption is. But specifically, corruption is a noun which curiously can have two meanings. And I think this is really significant. The first one is dishonest or fraudulent conduct by those in power, typically involving bribery. So influence and power for money. And that's pretty obvious and pretty easy to prosecute. If you have the evidence, it's a criminal act. But the second definition is something that makes it a little bit more complicated, and that is So corruption is the process by which something, typically a word or expression, is changed from its original use or meaning to one that is regarded as debased. Now, I realize that the second definition applies to language primarily. One might say, so-and-so corrupted the phrase whatever by saying whatever. What I'm using it as almost a second definition of legal corruption or illegal corruption, and that is, isn't corruption in terms of the second part of the definition, in other words, debasing something from its original use to something completely different, isn't that the real question of what happens with government corruption, right? So something originally intended to serve the people is changed from its original use or meaning to something regarded as wrong or debased. And this is where you get into political descriptions of corruption, depending on your worldview. If you hail from one, and I hate to say this, but if you are a partisan of one side or one worldview of government in the United States or in the world, you have a certain view. Also, if you have an orientation to view a certain economic system as being corrupt or correct, then you have a different kind of worldview. But what we want to concern ourselves here with is, I think, is real corruption that debases the original intent of how the government is supposed to operate in the United States, at least constitutionally. And if you take a quick look at Twitter, you're going to see all kinds of things about both sides saying this one's unconstitutional, that one's unconstitutional, this one's trying to debase the constitutional republic, if that one is doing this and so forth. But nothing is that easy anymore. You don't have these cases that are right in the crosshairs where the school superintendent makes sure the contract for plumbing, let's say, goes to a plumber who gives a kickback to the superintendent or the super's friends, or the judge that gives the list of distress properties to friends who quickly go out and buy them before they are auctioned for a kickback. Or let's say certain officials who are quote unquote on the take, or another wrinkle is people put in office by the underworld and the upper world with the understanding that they're going to look the other way when they need to. Whether it's cops on the take, attorneys general, cabinet officials, senators and congressmen, prominent state politicians, and of course, presidents. And then, of course, the garden variety big city machine politics kind of corruption that many of us, if we grew up in big cities at any time in the last 100 years, are familiar with. And this is handing out patronage jobs to make sure everybody votes the way the machine intends it to, or the corrupt Southern parish leadership that makes sure certain kinds of people are kept down. And these aren't fantasies. These are real stories that I have edited into metaphors. Racism, big city corruption, state government corruption, county corruption, parish corruption, small town corruption, federal government corruptions. And we're going to talk about that in the second half of this podcast. Now, I just want to mention this very quickly. I had to print a lot of stuff before I did this podcast because I did a lot of research. And, I hate my printer because I hate paying for print cartridges because they're expensive. So guess what? If you want to save money on print cartridges, you can save as much as 30% at Cartridge World in Maple Grove off of Weaver Lake Road between Dairy Queen and Subway. They also service the Roseville, Minnesota area. 763-420-6632, or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. You will be so glad you did, because you're going to save a boatload of money from those big, bad office supply stores that are so expensive. Cartridge World. Now, also in the news these days, you're hearing it, and that is all this talk about foreign manufacturing. Some companies are preparing to bring some of their manufacturing back to the U.S. They're actually being told to do this. If this is you, if you're the guy who's making the decision or you're in the decision-making chain, you need an American manufacturing company that can cope with your plans. If this is you, consider American manufacturing at Depot Star, American Design, Engineering, and Manufacturing. They're on it. Visit their website at depotstar.com, DEPOTSTAR, right here in Ramsey, Minnesota. DepotStar.com. I am of the opinion that government in the United States at this point in our history is way too powerful, whether it's the executive branch or Congress. But when we talk about bureaucracies, state government, city government, and so forth. So that's my particular little bugaboo, so to speak. But here's a shot from the smorgasbord of the Devil's Den, which I call government. And it doesn't necessarily have to be federal government, but often it is. Federal agents employing prostitutes on presidential trips. You remember that story. Solvent banks being forced to take TARP funds during the 2008 financial crisis. Federal bailouts, questionable elections, a Federal Reserve with no real oversight. These are all real things in our country that you could refer to as some sort of corruption. And then there is what I would refer to as legal corruption. This is unelected boards deciding on who gets lucrative construction contracts, public-private partnerships, with enormous amounts of money being granted to them from various parts of the government to spend on lobbying, public unions with the same, public-private partnerships for specific projects from waste management to environmentally friendly systems treatments, that kind of thing, which can only be secured by quote-unquote networking and, quote, friendships with key people in major cities, small cities, county, state, and federal governments. And, of course, we all have had some experience with that at some level or another. These are examples, and really they are nothing compared to the kind of fraud, influence peddling, padding paychecks, payoffs, and control of politicians in this country, and it has been going on a long time. And so I'm going to give you some specific examples, which are a matter of history, examples of corruption dating back to the Articles of Confederation, which, as you know, preceded the U.S. Constitution, which, again, some of us have been raised with the idea that the Constitution is sacrosanct and could, you really, if you're following the Constitution or living up to your oath of the Constitution, you could do no wrong, right? And here's some of the greatest hits. We all know who Aaron Burr was, right? Aaron Burr's the guy that killed Hamilton. So Aaron Burr was the governor of New York, and Governor Burr allegedly tried to get a grant to a large part of the Louisiana Purchase in order to set up his own country. He was arrested and charged with treason, but alas, the treason was never proven. And I've always felt that Aaron Burr was actually the subject of the famous story that we all read in eighth grade history, A Man Without a Country. Andrew Jackson appointed Samuel Swartout to the New York City Comptroller's Office. Swartout then embezzled $1.2 million, a fortune in those days. And of course, we can't forget that Jackson, the first Democrat, was the largest and most enthusiastic slave owner and slave trader in the United States at the time. This one is good too. Simon Cameron, Republican, was Lincoln's Secretary of War, and Cameron resigned famously in 1862. He also produced dollar bills with his face on them just before the election of 1864, thinking this would be great because I can run for president and everyone will know my face. Thaddeus Stevens, who was, I think, a senator sort of a gadfly at the time, when discussing Cameron's honesty with Lincoln, told him, "I don't think that he would steal a red-hot stove." When Cameron demanded Stevens retract this statement, Stevens told Lincoln, "I believe I told you that he would not steal a red-hot stove. I now take that back." So then we go on to the 1870s, when American hero U.S. Grant had one of the most corrupt administrations in U.S. history. And that is saying something, considering how long ago it was and how forgotten it is. One of the highlights was Grant's abrogation of the U.S. Indian Nations Treaty, which had been settled. And here's how it happened. Grant and Sherman sent Custer out to the Badlands because we were in the middle of a depression in the United States, and they figured if they could find gold, then we could get out of the depression. Grant and Sherman said to Custer, "You go out and look for this gold. We think it's there, but don't tell anyone if you find it." Now, part of that was they wanted to use the gold for the United States, quote unquote, for the United States. The other thing is that the Badlands, then and now, is sacred land for the Indians. And of course, Custer went out there and found the gold where today Deadwood is, and then called in a reporter because Custer thought that if he was the guy who found the gold and saved the nation, then that would allow him to build a presidential campaign on that accomplishment. And of course, the news story triggered one of the biggest gold rushes in history. You've all seen the show Deadwood. And by the way, that gold mine in Deadwood is still and has been for some years the largest producing gold mine in history of gold mines, at least in the United States. Well, what happened was it triggered a war with the Indians because we broke the treaty, which guaranteed we would not mess around with that part of the world, Badlands, which was considered sacred by the tribes. So that's one of the things that happened when Grant was president. People don't know whether he was drunk or whether he didn't understand or whether he trusted people too much. But let's just put it this way. Grant's greatest moments was probably during the time that he was the general of the Potomac. So, you know, when he became president. And by the way, he got reelected and he was could have been reelected again. He was one of the most beloved of all presidents that we've ever had. And I find that fascinating considering the level of corruption in that administration. I take it, you know, Grant was a terrible businessman. And so I take it to sort of be understanding the presidency is certainly not the military and people who are great military leaders often don't make great presidents for just that reason, because it's about politics. So let's move ahead to the McKinley administration. And during that time, which was the, 1890s, there was land fraud and blackmail. And the principals were then pardoned by McKinley's one of his successors, President Hayes. And I could go on with Wilson, Roosevelt, Truman, Ike, Kennedy, Johnson's ridiculous escalations in the Vietnam War, and of course, Richard Nixon, then Bush and Clinton, and Bush II, Obama's problems, for example, with Fast and Furious. But you're beginning to get the idea that corruption in some way, shape, or form is part of every administration. And I think, you know, the stuff of headlines, but I think it's a lot worse than these headlines and these little examples that I can find in half an hour doing a little research for this project, and you could too. Of course, the biggest boon to corruption was when one congressman and chair of the House Judiciary Committee, Andrew Volstead, in Minnesota, championed something called prohibition. So he was a U.S. congressman from Minnesota. And I believe that prohibition is probably the most significant policy mistake in U.S. history. But my friends tell me I'm exaggerating, so I'll just let you think about that. Prohibition lasted from 1920 to 1933. It was, of course, passed in 1919, went into effect in 1920. During this time, embryonic and ethnic criminal gangs in medium and large-sized cities all across America, as well as rich people and anybody else that could get into the act, including attorneys general and everything else, started making, smuggling, and selling illegal alcohol on the industrial level. Now, if you believe the TV show Boardwalk Empire, even the Secretary of the Treasury, who bought a massive, because medicinal alcohol was legal, bought into a massive medicinal alcohol plant someplace in New Jersey or New England or wherever it was. I don't remember. And what happened was these guys made billions of dollars by certainly our standards, and actually probably billions of dollars by 1920s standards. And what did they do with the money aside from buy big cars and have phenomenal parties and so forth and so on? They bought politicians, judges, lawyers, prosecutors, and cops. The 1920s was a time when the Italians in Chicago, the Capone guys and others hooked up with the Russian Jewish lawyers on Maxwell Street. The money and brains built an empire controlling Hollywood, governors, state legislatures, attorneys general, and a city called Las Vegas. And yes, even presidents. Chicago not only famously ensured the election of John F. Kennedy as president, it also, prior to this, had made sure that Roosevelt was elected in 1933 and reelected, and it made sure that Truman actually did defeat Dewey. And if you go back to my polls podcast, that poll that said that Dewey would defeat Truman might have been right. But when you factored in Cook County, it's another thing entirely. Cook County, Illinois, where famously the mob, you know, ran the elections of first ward Democrats, would famously create incredible margins for key politicians. And this is what happened with Truman. It certainly happened with Roosevelt a couple of different times. And it definitely happened with John F. Kennedy. So the source for this material, obviously there's lots of different books about the manipulation of votes in Cook County over the years. books about Mayor Daley, as well as books about Capone. But Gus Rousseau is probably the guy who has put it all together in one spot, and I refer to Gus Rousseau's work a lot in this podcast. He wrote The Outfit and Super Mob, and I'll put it links for those books on Amazon because I think they're really worth reading. One of the great stories that Rousseau accounts is that Truman's attorney general was a guy by the name of Tom Clark. Tom Clark was the father of Ramsey Clark. Clark was a creature of Tom Pendergast in Kansas City, as was Harry Truman. The squeaky clean Harry Truman was brought up by the Pendergast machine, and the Pendergast machine and Kansas City was a subsidiary of the Chicago Outfit, or the Capone gang, and the people that followed up on Capone after the end of Capone. So fast forwarding into the 40s and the 30s, you know, Harry Truman became senator largely because of Tom Pendergast. And yes, there are definite, according to Gus Rousseau and a lot of other people, that there's plenty of documented connections between Truman and Tom Pendergast and the Chicago Outfit. When people wondered why the mob was so powerful during this period of time, you know, if you'll recall, it was the meeting in Apalachin in New York where they finally found a bunch of mobsters having a sit down, and they couldn't deny anymore that there was a mob influence. And of course, the creation of the commission brought together the five families. In Chicago, Al Capone made sure there wasn't five families because he killed all of his competitors on St. Valentine's Day up on Clark Street. But Tom Clark was the attorney general during the Truman administration. And he made sure that there were no prosecutions of the mob. And oddly enough, during that period of time, this is when Hoover was talking about communists. Another Truman appointee, David Bazelon, was appointed to the office that disposed of the property of the Japanese who were interred by the U.S. government during World War II. Now, Bazelon, according to Gus Rousseau, had a number of connections to organized crime. You know, we're talking about the Outfit in Chicago. Bazelon was later appointed to a federal judgeship by Truman. One of the things that's most interesting about this guy is that the really choice pieces of land that the Japanese Americans developed over the years were sold to mob associates as well as companies, and also property disposed of of Germans that both overseas and here in the United States that we also took or seized was disposed of by this office, and a lot of his outfit people, friends of Bazelon, were able to enrich themselves. And what was the point? Well, they were laundering money is what they were doing, but that's, you know, that's for later. And of course, Bazelon was appointed to a federal judgeship. And when this was all found out, this became a huge story during the time. And if you want to read more about it, you just read The Super Mob by Gus Rousseau. Okay, so then we get into things, you know, current time, which I don't need to go through because there's lots of examples of, as we continue through this, and I could do four podcasts about this. But people say, well, what about the RICO Act? This is the tool that we used to get rid of gangsters in the 1970s and get rid of the five families. Didn't we get rid of all the gangsters in the 1970s and 80s? Like Giuliani, didn't he get rid of all the gangsters? Well, I would respond to that by saying, well, did we now? And again, referring to Gus Rousseau, what about the Korshaks and the Pritzkers? What about the assertion that cocaine money is responsible for the economic boom that built Miami? Just watch Cocaine Cowboy on Netflix, and you'll see what I'm talking about. What about the fact that Ronald Reagan's best friends created MCA? For example, according to Rousseau, Jules Stein, as well as Lou Wasserman, who hailed from the Mayfield Road days back in Cleveland. Well, you'd have to read Gus Rousseau's books again to get it all, but it's pretty fascinating when you start looking into this. And then we get into the international crime syndicates, illicit drugs like fentanyl, meth, and X, not to mention cocaine and heroin, Eastern Europe, Russia, China, Latin America, running drugs and women and children, gambling, things that make Jeffrey Epstein look like a piker, and they are making billions. What do you think they're going to do with all that money? So when we get into changing governments from one thing to another so that the interests of the corrupt are served and not the citizens, well, then you have corruption on a grand scale. And I would just simply say, try proving that. Just recently, Senator Elizabeth Warren said that she'll make government corruption her number one priority if elected president. And she's focusing on the banks and the capitalists and the rich guys, as most Democrats do. She proposes a number of laws and regulations that will stop it. And I just say this, good luck. Because here's the problem, especially in this time when we are talking about certain proceedings in Congress involving certain presidents. What's corrupt? Who's corrupt? And these are questions that you have to answer for yourself. And maybe your answer is right, and maybe your answer is wrong. So who's corrupt and what's corrupt? The CIA guys, the FBI guys, the so-called deep state, the state legislature, the governor's office, the local county, the city that you live in, Congress, President Trump and the Clinton Foundation. In my view, none of them are clean. Many of them, if not all of them, are probably extremely corrupt. Because I have to look at certain people and ask, well, how does a casino go bankrupt? You know, how do you get away with employing non-union labor on big projects in the state of New York or the city of New York? What about the Bushes and perhaps America's most corrupt political family, dating back to big old Joe Kennedy or the uncle who was the mayor of Boston? Maybe in all of history, the Kennedy family still, and yet they're the ones talking about certain causes and ideas that certain people believe are indications of their commitment to the good things that government can bring. And you have to ask yourself, well, who are the patriots? And I would say this. I know that there's a lot of partisanship. I know that there's a lot of people that feel a certain way. But I would say, whoever you are, your guess is as good as mine at this point, because we just don't know what we don't know. I can tell you this. In my opinion, silly games like term limits and piddling around with the Electoral College aren't going to change anything, or passing new laws that close the barn door, because our problem is our governments are way too powerful. Why? Because we have ceded control of our lives over to the governments. We don't want to be responsible. We would like to delegate our authority to governments. And of course, when the governments become wormwood, what do we care? We don't want to deal with it. And so taking back the power is going to be the battle of the century, the 21st century. And I just don't know if it's ever going to happen. Because the question is, does anyone want to take on that fight? And right now, I would say no. I would say today, people, and I don't blame people for this. People want their health care. They want their retirement. They want their jobs, or they want a future. They want their kids to go to a good school. They want people to be happy. They want their friends to be happy. They want to be happy. And if they take a little corruption with their morning coffee, well, the truth is we needed that stadium. We needed that downtown development project. We needed to have that light rail. We needed to have these things that were built. And we doesn't care who enriched themselves at that public trough, because it doesn't matter. So it doesn't matter whether you vote Republican or Democrat in the next election. They're all dirty. The culprit is a government that is out of control and much too powerful, and they have us on the road to serfdom. Now, by the time you hear this podcast, I wouldn't be surprised to see snow falling in the Twin Cities. And then, of course, your heating is going to have to work. So the last chance to do some heating checks, think of Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul for home or business. When it comes to keeping all of your systems running, these systems just are no joke these days. They can get very complicated when you have plumbing or heating problems or air conditioning problems in the summer. You want reliable service, and that means Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. They go back four generations in St. Paul. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. When they show up to do the heating, or if you actually want to talk to Ryan about some projects you might have around the house, I got to tell you, you might have had issues over the summer with pipes. When it gets cold, that's going to become a potentially dangerous problem when it comes to your house. You don't want to go into a house that has had a freeze where the pipes have frozen. It's just like a bomb went off in the house. So this is why you call Ryan to check that stuff. But also, they can save you a lot of money on water usage, because these days, newer toilets are way more efficient. That's one question. They also do in-floor heat. So if you think about remodeling the basement, basement or you want to be able to make your basement habitable, definitely check out their concepts when it comes to in-floor heat. Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. Check them out online at ryanplumbing.com. Great to be back in the studio. Thanks for listening to Podcast 868, the Bob Davis Podcast. How much corruption can you handle? How much can you handle?